talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers. This is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome back to the second hour of Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you live statewide on Civic Media. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits, and all points of view are welcome. I want to say something about DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, and I want to say something about common sense. As a Democrat, we are committed to civil rights, and we are committed to the absolute acceptance and integration of all people, regardless of race, color, creed, or anything else, into our society. And I think the idea of having people at the university level who are encouraging kids who come from backgrounds, for instance, that maybe they're first generation college, maybe they're having a hard time fitting in, eliminating all discrimination against them. That is a core value of the Democratic Party, and it always has been. But I think it's possible for common sense to say, wait a minute, when you see things that I think actually are counter to that. And here's one I want to raise right now. At the University of Wisconsin Law School, and I'm an alum of the University of Wisconsin Law School. I had 3 great years there in Madison. It was a great time in my life. I was the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Law Review. And I had a wonderful experience, wonderful faculty, and wonderful fellow students. But there are now apparently 2 mandatory courses for law students. They're going into law school first year and then after the first semester, DEI courses. And they bring in what's called a social justice educator. I assume it's not a regular member of the faculty. And in this last one, students, this is how she instructs it. Students were asked to share, quote, words, phrases, stereotypes, slurs, words of bias that could be associated with minority groups or any group. And people were encouraged and required by the pressure of that course to say slurs, which I'm not going to repeat on this air, against Black people, Native Americans, Asians, Middle Eastern people. And they were all taken very seriously, but these slurs sting, and they were said in the classroom at the University of Wisconsin. Then they were asked about slurs against white people, which I'm also not going to repeat. And that was handled with a little more levity, And people are sitting there suddenly looking at each other, and it's a very diverse law school, and there's no discrimination at all in enrollments. And hearing slurs and saying slurs about one another. And then part of the instruction was, quote, white people benefit from racial oppression, regardless of their actions. There are no exceptional white people, end quote. That's a false statement. There are a heck of a lot of people of all colors and creeds, ethnicities, fighting for civil rights. Apparently, the American Bar Association has a requirement that the school provide education on bias and racism. It's a very general requirement, but I think that should be satisfied by, you read The Invisible Man, you read some great literature about the loneliness, the oppressiveness of being a minority individual in a majority society, and I think that's terrific. But the problem is that this DEI stuff hasn't worked at all on the metrics that I think it should work in Wisconsin. African-American or Black enrollment went up 1%, I think, over the last couple of years. In single digits, very low single digits. Same with Latino, or I should say indigenous enrollment. Latino enrollment went up more. But DEI is no longer, in my opinion, being used to encourage and accept and help succeed minority students or any students. It's being done to put people in a classroom and talk about slurs that sting to the core. And there's absolutely no justification for that. There's no educational benefit in that. It divides people. It simply fans the flames of identity politics and divides us as a nation. And it's a very, very, very bad problem. It's worse in other schools. In George Washington University in the Washington, D.C. area, a very fine one, there was a teacher who really retaliated against Jewish students and Israeli students. And she finally, they let her go, and she went back to the Middle East somewhere in Qatar, I think, and is teaching there. Now in California, there was a teacher in one of these courses who made the Jewish students stand up and stand in a quarter to see how isolated they would feel. There's no science to this. There's no education to this. This is a perversion of the idea of acceptance, a perversion of the idea of embracing people and helping them if they're especially if they're first generation college, and that's not simply minority kids. That's kids from everywhere in Wisconsin, northern Wisconsin, everywhere else. Should be a welcoming environment. But when you have somebody, and I don't know what kind of training these instructors have. I don't know what the educational basis is for what they're doing. I don't know what the science is. For somebody to sit people in a chair, in their chairs, and they look at each other, and they were friends. You know, maybe they played cards. We used to play hearts, and we'd play sheep's head, play poker in the lounge at the law school. Go out to Bob and Jean's, which is probably no longer there, have a few beers. University Avenue. And then suddenly you're sitting around exchanging slurs. That's frankly disgusting. And there's one other thing. And this is people getting rid of their common sense, in my opinion. Their common sense. Let me give you an example. During Pride Month, they have a naked bike ride. Frankly, I don't think naked people should ride through crowds in a city. If they want to be naked, they should get out to a nudist colony. Out in the bushes, out in the suburbs somewhere of Dane County, wherever they have one. But this last time, they had a 10-year-old girl in it. And this 10-year-old girl had boots and a helmet, and that was it. And she was photographed and put on Facebook. And the DA in Dane County said that because the intent wasn't sexual, no one could be prosecuted. That's absolutely bad law. It's not an intent crime at all. And professor at the University of Wisconsin Law School said that, agreed and said that they couldn't be prosecuted. What it comes down to, and let's be very, very clear here. If you have a naked 10-year-old girl in a bike ride in Madison, and at the end of it, they drink white wine at the picnic, there's no prosecution. If you brought her to Milwaukee in West Allis, and did it in the 4th of July parade, and you drank beer at the picnic, there would be a prosecution. So I've had enough of all this stuff. The deal is this. We're very welcoming and embracing society and very, very supportive of people's private choices and absolutely colorblind and supportive of every individual human being in this state, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of anything, any immutable characteristic. But when you put them in a classroom and have them exchanged vicious slurs to one another, for what purpose? Where's the science of this? There is no science. And I think, you know, at some point, it's worse in the Ivy League. Right now, by the way, there are the alumni of Cornell are getting together to throw out their president, who's no good. These people are all intimidated. But the president of Harvard, they threw her out. They threw out President of the University of Pennsylvania. And several others should go too. They're intimidated. Well, let me tell you something. The University of Wisconsin is a great university. At one time, Madison was ranked number 34 in the world. Not just the United States. We're talking Oxford and Cambridge. We're talking the Sorbonne, Salamanca. We're talking Heidelberg. Talking Moscow, China, everywhere, the Ivy League, every state, private university in the United States, number 34 in the world. And at some point, it's going to take a shakeup, in my view, of people right from the top. Chancellors and deans, but also administrators of the whole system. Somebody's got to get some common sense and knock this stuff out. All right, I'm going to go to the lines. Jim in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Jim?
Hi. I'm interested in DEI, and what I've found is most people don't know what DEI stands for even, which is, of course, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I, as an educator, dealt with a lot of different kids in the classroom different times, as well as parents and teachers with different ideas. This is an important thing, because people need to come together around some of the things you talked about earlier about, you know, the value of diversity, making sure that the inclusion is occurring, make sure equity takes place. And both students and teachers need to hold discussions about this and follow a curriculum which is well-developed and not some of the examples that you used, which I really question making generalized comments about DEI based on one or two examples. And I think the jury's out on that as to how, but as I've read some of the policies of the universities, that's not what they're talking about. In fact, good DEI would teach instructors not to teach the way you mentioned. And so I think it's important too that we do not generalize about DEI based on examples, but that we maintain higher standards for DEI in the institutions. And the same thing is true in business, where people are doing it. This is just, you know, young people today just laugh at a lot of the racism that we see, because they're beyond that, just like they're beyond homophobia. And, you know, the world's moving that direction. And we do need to make sure, though, when kids come from areas where they've never, they're in the suburbs, they're up north, they've never run into a black person before. Maybe they've got some Native Americans in the area. The DEI's intention is to bring people together.
Right. Jim, that's an excellent call. We've got to step away for a second. I can't thank you enough for calling. I hope you do in the future, and I agree with you 100%. And the examples that I gave, I think, should be rejected, but I agree with you about the core value of DEI. Coming up, Tanya Chutkan is scheduling another case that could interfere with the Trump trial coming up.
Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. That was a great call from Jim. And I'm very, very pleased to have him say it as well as he did, that the core of a well-thought-out DEI curriculum is essential. It's essential to breaking on down barriers and accepting one another. And what I've described, which is happening, according to reports at the University of Wisconsin Law School, was certainly not that. And it's got to be absolutely clear that we're not going to use the appearance or pretense of DEI to drive more wedges between people. That's got to stop. Cassandra Madison, my friend, thanks for calling, Cassandra. What's in your mind today?
Hi, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. And I really enjoyed listening to Jim a few moments ago and his experience with BMI. I am an educator in higher education, and I just wanted to share my thoughts on it. And I have not seen the article from the UW Law School. I'll have to Google and look it up. But from my observation, sometimes I find that the individuals who many of these educational institutions bring into the classroom have absolutely no formal training or research or credentials to teach the class. Oftentimes, they are advocates, and there's a difference between people who are advocates and those who are actually researchers in the field. And so I would encourage educational institutions, if they are going to include DEI in some form or another, the people you bring into that classroom should be trained with some kind of educational degree in the field. They should not be advocates. And what you described, what the guest speaker asked the classmates to do, I find that highly unacceptable. I have taught classes in race and ethnicity, and when I teach my class, I present the topic in a way with the understanding that there are students who have not been introduced to certain, or they do not have experiences with race. There are students from rural backgrounds where they have lived in very homogenous communities, and there's just a lot they don't know. Oftentimes they're afraid to ask. It's a little awkward, and we have to leave open that possibility that people are not being racist or any other of the isms. It's just that they have not had many encounters with a lot of people. And it should, and the educational institution should be a place for students to explore, learn, and ask questions without judgment. So I have not been pleased with the way DEI has been presented in many of the classrooms, and we do need trained people in order to do it. Well, Matt, thanks for letting me give my opinion on the matter.
I love your calls, Cassandra. Call more often, and I couldn't agree with you more. And I've got to say, just listening to you and Jim, the articulateness and the passion behind it and the authenticity behind it. I wish we could bottle that and tape it and send it around, have that in all the DEI classes. I couldn't agree more. What you said and what Jim said is humane. It's the right thing to do. And you may have put your finger on it, because whenever there's any kind of, and when an industry arises, you get a lot of people coming in and they claim they're experts in all this. And apparently what's happening on the fringes is that people are using it in a very divisive way and sort of to pit people against each other. And I think that's a huge mistake. But the way you and Jim just described it, it was terrific. That's all I can say. It was absolutely terrific. Thank you. Well, poor Tanya Chutkan, she has just scheduled a trial for April 2nd. Of a January 6th insurrectionist. So why is that relevant or important? Because our friend, I'm saying it sarcastically, a demented sociopath who's running for president, Donald Trump's trial is March 4. And she is obviously keeping in mind that possibly, through appeals and skirmishing and lying and so on, that Trump will somehow get booted. I am not as pessimistic about it as others. Very, very common for some judges will schedule two trials for the same day, thinking one of them will be resolved somehow, and they keep their calendar free. If Trump goes on March 4, then she can easily postpone the other one, but stand by. I think that going on the back of her mind, you've seen what his lawyers did, claiming they had COVID or might have COVID in one of the cases, and everything goes up to the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. She's sort of hedging her bets here is what's going on. Eric of Wauwatosa, thanks for calling. What's your mind, Eric?
Yeah, hello, Matt. I'd like to say that I heard you earlier talking about the, and I don't know much about the article and who the source was and who had reported this classroom incident. But I think earlier you said something about exceptional white people. And I was wondering if what you meant was the article said without exception, all white people benefit. Like not exceptional, but no white people are the exception in that we all benefit from the system as it is. Is that a better way to say that?
That might be, but I'm simply quoting. And so I'll quote again. And I object to this, the methodology of this instructor, and that has got to change. Let me look back here and find out exactly what they said. But no, that wasn't, it was not that. And I didn't repeat any of the slurs and so forth, because frankly, they were disgusting. They have no business being in a, no business being in it. But I will read you again what was in the article. Google the article. You can easily Google the article. And what was said was this. They were told to come up with slurs, bad things about different groups, and say them out loud to one another. And then it says, this, and this is in the instructional materials, quote, white people benefit from racial oppression regardless of their actions. There are no exceptional white people. Now, what I interpret that to mean is that no matter how good a white person you are, you benefit from it, and there's no exception to that rule. But those are the words, Eric, okay? And they're not my words, and I'm not going to say how I would do it better. I wouldn't do any of it. I would do what Jim said, and I would do what Cassandra said, which is to take into account everybody, assuming people are in good faith, and instruct them in diversity, equity, and inclusion, but not divide them. And this is my concern, that they are being divided. Thanks a lot for calling. Call anytime, Eric. Okay, we're going to step away for a little bit here. A lot of news, a lot of weather, and you will not believe what Greg Abbott and they're doing in Texas against the federal government coming up.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds.
At 101.1 FM, broadcasting to Southeast Wisconsin at 540 AM.
I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, Texas has stepped up the attack against the United States, and I'm not talking about 1861. Here's what Governor Abbott did. I'm going to give you a little background from yesterday and from the Supreme Court decision. Remember, there's a Supreme Court decision that vacated a Fifth Circuit decision upholding Abbott's right to put razor wire on the border near the river, injuring migrants. And remember, some of these poor people, a woman and her two kids drowned, and Abbott would not let federal agents nearby to help them, exclude them by the Texas National Guard. There was a lawsuit, and a trial judge, a district judge, they call him at the trial court, ruled that the federal government could take down the razor wire that Abbott had put up to injure the migrants. That was appealed by Abbott to the Court of Appeals, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals is the most conservative in the country. A lot of Trump appointees, but more importantly, it's always been conservative. It's on the South. Remember, there are numbered courts of appeals throughout the country that comprise all states. Right now, I'm broadcasting from Milwaukee. Milwaukee in Wisconsin is in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The headquarters are in Chicago. And the judges are appointed appellate judges to look at cases, consider cases on appeal from Wisconsin, Indiana, and Illinois. Well, the Fifth Circuit is a number of southern states, including Texas. The Fifth Circuit overturned the district court and said that no, Abbott had the right to put the razor wire there, and that the federal government could not come in and cut it. Now, that was such a lawless opinion. One of the preeminent parts of our Constitution, there are many of them. You're familiar with the Bill of Rights. You're familiar with the First Amendment, Second Amendment, and so on. But one of the preeminent parts of our Constitution is that the federal government trumps the state government. In other words, when push comes to shove, if there's a law on something and it's in contradiction to a federal law, The state law yields. There are no exceptions. And that's it. And there's certain things that are only a matter of federal law. For instance, like copyright and patents. So for them to say that Texas law trumps federal law when the federal agents are going in to take down something at our border. This involves immigration. This involves our border. That's not in the state provinces. That is something exclusively for the federal government. It went up to the Supreme Court. There were six tarantulas. Four of them did something predictable, but two of them sided with the three Democrats. And those two were Amy Coney Barrett, John Roberts, the Chief Justice. So for a 5-4 decision, they ruled that the federal government can go in and remove the razor wire. Abbott is a sneaky, sly sort. By the way, he's pushing very hard to be the vice presidential nominee, and don't rule him out. He's really bad news, by the way. So he said, well, yeah, they said the feds could come in, but it didn't say we couldn't put it up. And so they keep putting it up. And a few federal agents come in and take it down right when they put it up. But, you know, Biden has a couple of other things to think about. Ukraine, the Red Sea, the Houthis, Gaza, Israel, Taiwan, China. I mean, are you kidding me? And so the net is that there's more razor wire being put up. Then Texas is excluding some federal agents from the border, even though it's our border collectively. It's not Texas's border alone. And here's what he said. What he said was, we are following the supreme law of the land. There's a concept among the sort of survivalists and others that there's some kind of overarching supreme law that's supreme even over our Constitution. And it says Texas has a right to self-defense. So the Texas National Guard can assert power over the federal government in Texas. That may sound familiar. South Carolina said that when they fired on Fort Sumter. Texas said that in 1861. There are a number of battles. You may have heard of them. Bull Run, Antietam, Shiloh. Wisconsin sent regiments down there. Regiments from Wisconsin, from Milwaukee, Racine, Janesville, Madison, elsewhere. We don't want that again. You cannot have individual states say that what they're doing trumps what the federal government law is. In Missouri, they passed a law that said that federal gun regulations were no good in Missouri. Missouri's were more permissive. That got overruled by a judge. But it holds things up, and you have to have a U.S. attorney that's willing to bring the prosecution. So down in Texas, what's going to happen? Let me tell you, and then I'll get to the lines. I see you on the lines. Do not hang up. But Eisenhower ran into this in the late 1950s. People resisted Brown versus Board of Education. They resisted federal law. And Alabama would not admit black students to the University of Alabama. So what happened was Eisenhower sent troops down there to escort the kids in. And the Alabama National Guard rose up, like the Texas National Guard now. And you know what Eisenhower did? He federalized them. You may not know that the National Guards are the commander-in-chief is Joe Biden. It's not Greg Abbott, even the Texas National Guard. As long as Biden doesn't assert the control, it's Abbott. But if Biden says, I want the Texas National Guard to go to the Red Sea and fight the Houthis, they're going to be there tomorrow. And if Abbott tries to interfere, Abbott's going to jail. That's the way it works. Now, here is the problem. We're going to go to the lines, but here's the problem. Biden is not in the same position as Dwight Eisenhower. Back then, there was general goodwill and unanimity in the North anyway, in most of the country, to not let states interfere with the federal government, number one. Number two, when he went down, he sent troops to Alabama, and the Alabama National Guard was there and he federalized them, nobody questioned his ability to do it. It's the truth. It's in the Constitution, but nobody questions his ability to do it. Now you have Donald Trump fanning all this stuff. He wants immigration to be the issue that gets him into the White House and keeps him out of prison. It's the only reason he's doing it. So if Biden sends federal troops down there, he's resisted doing that as much as possible. Doesn't want to use federal troops against our own people. Because Trump wanted to do that for bad reasons. But even if Biden did it for Eisenhower type reasons, the optics of it don't look good. There'll be cries of, well, why don't you keep them on the border and keep everybody out? Saudi Arabia, they shoot refugees seeking asylum from Yemen. Trying to get into Saudi Arabia, they machine gun them. In China, they expel them back to North Korea where they're tortured and killed. Nobody criticized that. Nobody even mentions it. But here is the dilemma for Biden. The agents of the federal government have to have the right, the Border Patrol, to patrol the border. The Texas National Guard is interfering with that on orders from this Greg Abbott. They're putting up razor wire, I think, in violation of the Supreme Court opinion, because Supreme Court said the federal government can take it down. That inferentially means the federal government wants it down, you don't put it up. He wants another lawsuit out of this. Trump will weigh in. Cornyn and Cruz will take the side of Abbott. We have a mini civil war in the making. Instead of shooting at a fort in Fort Sumter, South Carolina, this is happening by guerrilla warfare around the country. And thank God we have Joe Biden in there with wisdom and experience and decency and not a proto-fascist like Donald Trump. We're going to the line. Todd or Billy, thanks for calling. What's in your mind today, Todd or Billy?
Hey, Matt. I'm just curious about what you're talking about. Is this referred to as the Supremacy Clause? And I'm curious about how that works with recreational marijuana law. I thought that was maybe an example of state law being in conflict with national law.
Yeah, that's an excellent, it is the supremacy of the federal government, but I'll give you three examples. One is gun legislation in Missouri. The other one are sanctuary cities, say in New York and Chicago and Milwaukee for that matter. And number three is marijuana. The supremacy clause is supreme. So, and it does, you know, so anybody on the left will say one thing, the right will forget it. The federal government controls. So gun laws in Missouri, federal gun laws should be enforced in Missouri, regardless of what the Missouri legislature says, especially now they apparently want to pass a right to challenge a guy to a duel or a woman to a duel. I don't know. They try to intimidate people and pull out a pistol and they're sick. They're very sick. When it comes to marijuana is listed as a certain kind of substance that's illegal by the federal government. Some states have legalized it, some for medical reasons, some totally. I think Oregon and Washington totally. I think Illinois maybe totally. The subtext of all that is if the federal government were serious about enforcing the criminal law, those state laws are no defense at all. The dirty little secret is the federal government is wink-winking. But when it comes to funding it, there are a lot of lenders that won't lend to the industry because unless there's a much clearer indication of federal approval of it, there is that conflict in the law. So when you smoke a joint in Illinois, Oregon, or Washington, are you taking a risk of federal prosecution? Not really, because wink, wink, the society's changing, but it has nothing to do with any yielding of rights by the federal government unless they decide to take marijuana off of their list of prescribed substances? How about sanctuary cities? That was discussed a couple of sessions ago. The thing about sanctuary cities is there is no law that says that if ICE calls the sheriff in Milwaukee and says, tell me who's in your jail and are there citizens? So therefore, the common council can say, or the county board can say, we're a sanctuary city or a sanctuary county. If the federal government passed a law that said the federal government on inquiry of law enforcement in any of the anywhere in the United States, there must be cooperation, that's it. There wouldn't be any sanctuary cities. The only reason there are sanctuary cities is because right now it was always presumed. Now, here's the thing. The whole idea about sanctuary cities is well-intentioned. But in California, and I've said this before, guy got out. He'd come into the United States a number of times. He was a criminal. He was in jail. He got out, and that was not reported to ICE. And he shot a girl walking with her father in one of the piers down there. And if it had been reported to ICE, he would have been deported. So there has got to be a consensus in the United States, bipartisan, of what we're going to do with immigration. But when there is consensus, whatever the federal rules are on it or the federal laws on it are going to be absolutely enforceable against any state, regardless of their law. We'll step away. Coming up, Republican Chairman DeWitt in Arizona has stepped down because of the taped call with Carrie Lake. There's some developments on that coming up. Where it will go.
Get screened to learn more.
You're listening to The Shaw.
Come gather around, people, wherever you roam.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Wisco Paul, my friend. Thanks for calling, Wisco Paul. What's in your mind today?
Well, thanks for taking my call on that. Thanks for the informative the show today. You know, you can't run away from Biden's age, so don't. Biden is young for his age. You only have to look at Warren Buffett. He's 93 years old. And he manages, I don't know how much money, but it's an unbelievable amount of money. And in my lifetime, I can't think of a president that's done a better job in his first almost 3.5 years with all the adversity he suffered. So, you know, just run into your age, Joe. You're in really good shape. And think about guys like Warren Buffett. But the other three really important points, and actually there's four about Biden. He does like Social Security. He does like Medicare, and he does like the Affordable Care Act. And I don't know where Trump stands on any of that stuff because you can't believe anything that comes out of his mouth. So, and he doesn't want to be a dictator, not even for a day. So I just wish people would think about that when they look at Joe Biden. Age is only a number, and that is so, so true. And I don't care who he runs again, he's going to win. But when you look at the elections, it does come down to five states. I'm not worried about Wisconsin. I'm not worried about Pennsylvania. But anyway, I just want to say the things about President Biden. And I wish people would think about that and then take a hard look at Trump. So with that, you have a great day.
Thanks a lot, Paul. That's an excellent call, as always. Let me respond to a couple of things. On Social Security, Biden is the most pro-union president we've ever had. He's probably the strongest supporter of Social Security, and he won't permit it to be tampered with. And Trump is all over the place on that. He has supported privatizing it in the past, which would mean that you would be getting, you can already start an IRA or a 401k anyway, or a 403b or whatever, wherever you work. So it would be something like that, which you can do anyway. And then your employer would put something in it instead of Social Security. That's a very bad idea. The average person is not a professional investor. They chase the rainbow. They'll chase gold. They'll chase, you know, crypto. They'll chase all this stuff. And they turn 65. they're not going to have any money. They'll get cheated out of the money. With Social Security, you got a check. You got a check, period. And even if you've had a tough life, it'll probably be enough. You can buy, you can rent an apartment somewhere with heat, basically, and buy some food. That the Republican Party overall has looked on Social Security hungrily as, you know, the goose that lays the golden eggs. It's sort of like a wolf comes and they to a meat house and sees all the steak and they want to eat it. I mean, I'm not kidding. These guys are bad news. And the same with Medicare. They're, what they want to do is voucherize it. Privatize Social Security, voucherize Medicare. You get a voucher for 10 grand. Spend it any way you want. So you go out and some shyster will come up and they'll go, all right, I'll do you. But then they won't do pre-existing conditions. They'll send you to some quack. They'll object to everything unless you have a lawyer in the family. Did you ever try to fight with an insurance company? You ever do that? If you don't have a lawyer in the family, you're out of luck. And the truth of the matter is that if it was voucherized, basically poorer people or people that didn't know how to respond would die. Now Medicare, they cover it. And then they tell the hospital, this is what we're going to pay. And it's far less than the hospital the doctor wants. Too bad. That's it. You talked about the Affordable Care Act. The Affordable Care Act, the enrollments have gone up 80% under Joe Biden in not quite three and a half years, 80%. 21 million people this last year enrolled in it. 21 million people. You want to know what Donald Trump said about it? Most recently, he tried to kill it when he was president. Remember that? And John McCain, thank God, it was one by one vote, it wasn't killed. Recently, Donald Trump said, quote, Obamacare sucks, end quote. It's a crude statement. It demeans the whole process. But then he says, I will replace it with something so much better, so much better. He was president for 4 years. He didn't come up with anything at all that was better. And the truth of the matter is it's a scam. It's bait and switch. It's sort of like with Hitler in the Reichstag. He gets in as chancellor and he goes, listen, suspend yourselves. That's their Congress. Suspend yourselves for 4 years. I'll clean up the Versailles Treaty and all the stuff. You get rid of the Depression and then we'll be golden and then we'll put you back in. They said, okay, fine. The minute they did that, he started to kill them. So this clown goes, Obamacare sucks. Affordable Care Act sucks. Let me get rid of it and I'll replace it with something so much better. He'll put a knife in your back. He's not going to do so much better. The other thing I want to say about that and about the age thing is Biden is 81. Trump will be 78 in July. Trump's wobbly mentally. He's scared to death of going to prison. He's savage and he continues to insult and to attack and demean and lie. That's all he does. That's all he cares about. He doesn't care about foreign policy unless you pay him. The Russians paid him quite a bit of money. And he'll sacrifice Ukraine. He sacrificed the Kurds to the Turks just to get back to the golf course. Then he lied when somebody objected and said, well, they didn't support us in the Second World War. And he was wrong about that. Kurds don't have a country. There's no country named Kurdistan. They'd like there to be. But they're wonderful fighters, and they all fought on our side against the Nazis. So he lied about that. He's going to betray Taiwan. He's already attacked Taiwan, saying, well, they compete with our chip makers. Are you kidding me? We're delighted that they make those chips. They trade with us. We trade with them. And they don't violate the sanctions against communist China and against North Korea. But he did it because one Chinese bank that we know of paid him $5.8 million, and they just put services rendered. And he won't say what they were. And that's only one of the 500 pots of gold that have gone to him. And we did four of them under Pelosi, and the other 496 were shut down under Kevin McCarthy. Okay, coming into the show, stand by for another great show, Devil's Advocate with Dom and Crute. Great callers today, always great callers. And today was, I think, especially interesting and informative. Matt Flynn Direct will be back same time, same place tomorrow. And I'm signing off for today.
The order is rapidly fading, and the first one now will later be last, for the times, they are a-changin'.